future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the bullpen on this Saturday noon, or no, I guess afternoon now.
It's 1 o'clock. I can call it afternoon.
I'm so used to saying like Sunday morning and like the morning. And then when I started the show at 12, I was like, I don't know what to say. I'll just say on a Saturday, but I don't know. At a noon, it's a hard thing to define. Afternoon, like you said, much easier. Much easier. I think it's safely afternoon. Now, and we're reacting to the Astros-Rangers series because, listen, this is the first time that we really get to sink our teeth into a regular season baseball series in such a long time. Not just against the Rangers, which we talked about. It's been since 2015. But just any series where it really feels like we can break down this like game to game.
Yeah, no, and it's a lot of fun because the Astros, for the most part, have not had regular season series that mattered this much in terms of the context of their overall goals for a very long time. Like, I understand that last year we had some of those series against the Yankees in the middle of the year where the Astros, you know, showed them what's up and continued to show why they are the preeminent franchise in the American League. But, like, in terms of the context of what the Astros were looking to accomplish that season, there wasn't nearly as much weight in that series as there is in this one right now. This is the first time in a very long time that the Astros are playing catch up. And, you know, I don't want to say there's some level of fun in it because obviously I would rather see the Astros swap places with the Rangers and be the team that's four games up and now trying to bat down the contender. But there is some level of fun in like, hey, the Astros are potentially on the cusp of making a little run and chasing down the Rangers here.
Yeah, there's a little bit of extra juice being the hunter than the hunted.
Yeah.
That's just, it is what it is. So we're talking about the bullpen from last night's game. On the bullpen, we're talking about the bullpen. This will get confusing, I think, but I'll try my best not to make this. Just when you're listening or we're saying the bullpen, we're not talking about the show, the bullpen. We're
talking about the Astros
bullpen. The Astros bullpen.
On the bullpen.
And we're going to talk about who we trust most on the bullpen.
In the bullpen.
In the bullpen for the Astros.
Okay.
We're not going to talk about how, do we trust Joe George? We won't talk about that. We'll talk about, thank you. We'll talk about how we trust the pitchers in the Astros bullpen. Four Astros relievers played last night, and they retired 12 of the 13 Texas batters that they faced to help secure a 5-3 Astros win. And last night, I think you put it in the doc, you put it best. They reclaimed the best the throne as the team with the best bullpen ERA. Not just literally, but I also think that how by the book it was, I think it kind of felt like they reclaimed a little bit of the last year's bullpen magic.
Yeah, and like you have had not a ton of pieces in this bullpen that have been truly consistent throughout the entirety of the season. Hector Neris has been the best arm in the Astros bullpen so far this year. I don't really think that's up for debate. Phil Maton was excellent for the first 40, 50 games. Has hit a little bit of a rough patch recently, but looked excellent last night. And then obviously Ryan Pressly has finally started to round into form and become the Ryan Pressly that we all know and love. America's closer, right?
Yes.
You know, that's what he was, the World Baseball Classic. That's what he's been for the Astros. He's America's closer. And he is finally looking like that guy again, where once he comes into the game, you have every expectation that the door is about to be shut.
Yeah, and I think it really with Ryan Pressly in that rough patch where the bench absolutely ruined him after his appearance on the bench 7-9.
The bench is on a heater right now. Did you see what happened? They had June Lee, the MLB writer for ESPN, on. Dude got canned in the layoffs yesterday. Like, the bench is on a heater right now.
Yes. Although, was Jeff Van Gundy
we don't need to talk about
show.
Jeff Van Gundy coming on the wheelhouse and then losing his job 2 days later.
Yeah. So, do you think that the Bristol ESPN office was like, wait, these guys are doing hits on ESPN Radio in Houston? Can these guys? Do you put partial responsibility on yourself for booking Jeff Van Gundy?
Look, Jake was actually the one that busted Jeff Van Gundy. Oh, so you know what? I'll push all the blame over onto Jake. I was telling him, hey, look, we can't have JVG on. You know, ESPN's in a tumultuous period right now.
Uncertain times.
It's very, very rough waters up in Bristol, you know. Let's let JVG just sail these seas on his own as calmly as possible.
And Jake was like, ah, don't worry.
Jake was like, no, we need free agent discussion and James Harden discussion from Jeff Van Gundy. And he brought it. It was an excellent spot. Highly recommend you go listen to it on the Wheelhouse Podcast if you missed it. Might be his last spot as an ESPN analyst.
It likely his last spot as an ESPN analyst, although I feel like he'll land on his feet and be just fine. He'll be on our televisions sometime soon in the future. Now, moving back to the bullpen, ESPN 975-925 in the Astros bullpen, 162 games out of the year. Who would you say is in the like most highest position of your trust power rank, your internal
my circle
Andrew,
of trust?
Our Andrew Carlson circle. Yeah, who's in the inner circle?
Inner circle is Hector Neris and Ryan Pressly because of reputation right now. Other than that, okay. I can't throw anybody in the inner circle. In the circle slightly outside of the inner circle where I trust you, but I'm not giving you my deepest, darkest secrets.
Yes.
That would be, even though he's been a little bit patchy recently, Brian Abreu.
Yeah.
And I guess Phil Maton. Like, I have a hard time, just because of his track record, I have a hard time saying 100% I would throw Phil Maton into that mix, but given what he's done in his body of work this season, I'll throw Phil Maton in there, but it gets a little sketchy after that.
Yeah, it gets super sketchy after that, and what I think is the most interesting part about the psychology of who you trust coming out of the bullpen, and this obviously this conversation in the regular season is a little bit silly, but I think it does get, it becomes a real conversation, gets ratcheted up to 11 in the postseason, where obviously every run, every batter matters, every out matters, that there is some reliance on the track record that we have watching this team, and the like, oh, I've seen Ryan Pressly do this a million times before.
In very high stress situations.
Super high stress situation. Again, the fate of America was on the line and he was the person who got the ball. I think that it is an interesting thing where the track record matters, and less recently it's been a struggle bus, and then the track record absolutely does not matter. If you have two straight outings where you give up a run, I think you plummet down these rankings.
Well, I mean, that's the nature of baseball, right? You've got a guy like Ryan Stanek who, I think generally speaking, if I can borrow a term from Jeff Bagwell here, you look at the back of his baseball card.
Oh my God. And what are you like, what kind of deal are you about to sign him to?
You know, 3 years, 40 million.
Fleet money?
Yeah, 3 years, 40 million, something thereabouts. But you look at you know, his quote-unquote track record, and you're like, man, this is somebody who, you know, should be a high-leverage reliever. But then you look at, like, the actual situations and the way that his outings go. When Ryan Stanek is on, which he is for, you know, 2 or 3 week stretches a few times throughout the year, he looks damn near unhittable, and you're like, this guy should be a,
yeah, why isn't this guy pitching the seventh?
Yeah, this guy should be an elite high leverage arm for the team. But then you see, you know, the rest of his outings where he can't find the zone, people aren't swinging at his off speed stuff, they're
just balking all over the place.
That, you know what, I don't even want to go on a tangent because that'll just derail the entire segment here. So he's one of those guys where, do I generally trust him coming out of the bullpen? Yes, but he's not someone that I get excited to see coming out of the bullpen, right? And he's probably the last of the guys where you see him come out and it's like, all right, I'm happy with it or okay with it at minimum. Because after that, it's
It becomes, oh my God,
Rafael Montero's coming to the mound.
When Rafael Montero comes into the game, I've never been in a situation like that that is in a horror movie, but I imagine that those characters feel the exact same way when they see Michael Myers, when they see Ghostface, as I do when I see Rafael Montero entering an Astros game.
Damn, so Montero is literally a horror movie killer for you.
He murders the Astros for me. I don't even know what else do I say? He has a 7.29 ERA, and that's improved recently.
After two scoreless innings,
two perfect innings. Everyone takes the victory lap. This guy, oh my God, he ruins my enjoyment of baseball.
No, it's hard to say.
Enjoy baseball when Rafael Montero's on the mound?
I disagree with that because of the fact that, look, every time that he's come in and the lead is three runs or less, you are just expecting it to be, at best, a tie game by the time he leaves the mound.
Cross-sport comparison, it is like the old Cleveland Cavaliers where LeBron just couldn't play 48 minutes against the Warriors, and so he would have to sub out for like 2 minutes at the end of the first quarter.
And the Cavs would lose by 10 points in those 2 minutes.
Yes, yeah. You would be like, okay, like if they can just hold it to like just lose 4 points off the lead, they can still sub him back in and be in this game. And like you said, they absolutely blow him. That's what it feels like with Rafael Montero when he comes walking into this game. Like it is a, well, you know, if say the Astros have a 4-run lead, you're like, you're mentally penciling in your head, there's no way he gives up less than two.
Yeah, you're saying that this lead is going to be cut in half at best by the time Rafael Montero is now out of the game.
If not, completely gone. It might be an absolute disaster. I mean, it. So safe to say, Rafael Montero, low on our trust rankings.
Look, I trust Seth Martinez over Rafael Montero right now. That's where I'm at with him.
Sean Dubin or Rafael Montero?
Sean Dubin. I'm literally anybody but Montero.
I think that's the
ABM,
right answer.
Anybody but Montero.
Parker Meschinski, or he's not on the active roster.
I will take Montero over Parker Meschinski. Now, you know, making a slight switch here over to the starting rotation, just because I think in general, we have a solid level of trust with a lot of the guys in the rotation. How are you feeling about Javier? Are you... Because personally, I'm on edge with him a little bit at this point. The decreased velocity was a concern for me at the start of the season. And when it didn't pick up, I was worried. And now the fact that his fastball is flattened out, like, I'm legitimately concerned.
Yeah, no, I also am concerned. I mean, the trust obviously isn't there to the extent that it was last year or even earlier this season, where, again, you're kind of still dining out a little bit on the track record that Javier showed last year. So I do think, though, there is an element of, like you talked about the nerds on Twitter that are talking about his mechanics, where there is a glimmer of hope of, like, I know that there is a great starting pitcher in there. I saw it. I saw it 6 months ago, or more than 6 months ago now. But, like, at any given moment, there's just some tweak that us normies don't understand about baseball, and that he can kind of snap into that kind of form that he showed last year. And so there isn't, I wouldn't say like blind trust in him. Like when we're talking about the starting pitching matchups later in this Ranger series, neither of us like marked it in as Javier's on the bump. W for the Astros. He's not at that level. That I think Fromber is the only one at that level.
Agreed.
Where if the offense like even shows up to the ballpark, they should win a Fromber start. Javier isn't quite there anymore.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. But hopefully the law firm of Miller and Murphy, as my guy BK calls the pitching coaches over at Minute Maid Park, will be able to get him sorted out. And by the time we get back from the All-Star break, he'll be good as new.
Hopefully he will be good as new. Hopefully it'll be better than new money Montero. Speaking of new money and offseason spending, the Rockets still have some money to spend. How do you want them to spend it? That's next on The Bullpen. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside The Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
ESPN 97.5, 92.5. It's The Bullpen on your radio on the Saturday.
Or your Twitch, you know, however you may be consuming.
On your Twitch, on your app. If the app works. I assume the app works.
I haven't checked it, but I'm assuming that it works.
I also haven't gotten any, hey, fix the app, dip bleep. So, again, I assume the app works.
Yeah, we also don't have access to the text line currently, so people could be texting us that the app doesn't work.
Yes, if you want to reach us at Twitter, or on Twitter, at, there we go, Sean A. Mapes, at, what, Carlson Radio?
Yeah.
I tried to do that off the top. I do not know why I tried to do that off the top of my head. At Carlson Radio, and at Charles3_on air to reach each of us. And, yeah, if you have a suggestion or something you want us to talk about, be as mean as possible. Call us names. We really love that when you, hey, you idiot, don't you realize blankety blank blank?
Yeah, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Exactly. That's what Twitter's for, too. Like, just
baptism just by fire, baby.
Be brutal to us. Anyway, we're talking about, speaking of baptism by fire, the Rockets are trying to limit the fire that is consuming their roster by throwing money at it. And they are trying to improve this offseason. They already have done that in signing Fred VanVleet last night, 3 years, $130 million. But as a team that had the most cap space entering this offseason, they spent $40 million on a point guard. They still have the second most cap space in the league. They still have $25 million, according to ESPN's Bobby Marks. And there are still targets that they've been heavily rumored to that are still on the market. You still have the two kind of, I'd say, I've been jokingly calling them the big three with VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, and Brook Lopez, because that is who's been most consistently rumored as the people that the Rockets are aiming their money cannon at. They want these guys on their team. They are the top list of priorities at each of these three positions. So when you look at who's best available and those other guys, who's on your Rockets wish list? Spend some of Tillman Fertitta's money.
Christian Wood,
still available.
Still available. Yeah, that's not a reunion I would be interested in as a Rockets fan, as a basketball fan, in any sort of capacity.
Basketball's Rafael Montero, Christian Wood.
That's a little harsh to Rafael Montero, to be honest with you.
Actually, Rafael Montero was good last year.
It's a little harsh to Rafael. He's contributed to winning sports teams in his lifetime. I think that obviously a big is a clear priority for the Rockets. I don't necessarily agree with that. In general, the Brook Lopez pursuit has confused me a little bit because I do understand that the Rockets are in need of a rim protector and they don't view Alperen Şengün as somebody who's going to do that. But at the same time, from my own personal viewpoint, I want Alperen Şengün to be someone who is a hub of the offense next season. I want him to be a key player in a functional basketball team. And I want to see if he can be someone that we say, okay, yeah, he wasn't just the shining light in a sea of crap that we've seen with the Rockets the past couple seasons, but like he can actually be a, you know, centerpiece for this team potentially moving forward as a team that wants to be competitive. And this season was going to be sort of a litmus test of sorts for him in that sense that, hey, the Rockets are going to try and be more competitive. They're going to be trying to play more winning basketball. Is Alperen Şengün somebody that still is going to stand out when the Rockets are looking to do that? And if you bring in a Brook Lopez, that's going to cut into his minutes to a pretty significant degree. Like, obviously, they can play together to some level. And we know Ime has experimented with, you know, some Twin Towers type lineups when he was out in Boston. But I would be a little concerned if they bring in Brook Lopez, what it's going to mean for the immediate development of Alperen Şengün.
So I'm kind of the almost completely the other way. Not completely. I do understand the desire to just have Şengün kind of see what we got in him. See what he has on the offensive side of the ball and see what in a real offense he can do. An offense that not only is actually has structure into it, but he is a part of that structure.
Right.
He is viewed as a part of that structure. I guess I am higher on the opportunity or the theory of a too big lineup with Şengün and with Lopez, in theory, with Lopez's stretchability.
Yeah.
That is the key to this, is I don't really want any high-priced center that doesn't have the stretchability. I think when you're looking at a center for the Rockets, what they need is a defensive-minded center, a defensive-first kind of player. And Brook Lopez is that. And the reason he's so highly coveted is because not only is he that, he's a top, I think he was top three in defensive player of the year this year.
Oh, he's a fantastic defensive player. He checks every box that the Rockets need from a, hey, this will make them immediately a lot better next year standpoint.
And it's something that Udoka's talked about, is wanting more varied skill sets. And when you're talking about the big man position, the skill set that they have is not very defensive focused. So you want more of that defensive center. And as far as the defensive centers go, he's the only one that can make a shot outside the paint, and he can shoot threes. And so that, and that's another thing that the Rockets sorely need on offense is some stretchability. They're last in the league in 3-point percentage last year. So they just need shooters, whatever shape and size they come in. So that's why I'm a little bit more like, we better get Brooke Lopez, because I don't know where else you can effectively spend this $25 million that actually has an on-the-court wins and losses effect on this team. And again, I'm not saying go like 4 years, whatever. It's another, you know, Fred VanVleet style contract where hopefully you get him for two. If you had to sell for three and a partial guarantee,
then you do
three
it.
And a team option, you do that.
Yeah, and to your point, Brooke Lopez not only brings the stuff on the court that the Rockets are going to need, he's another one of those guys where he's coming from a winning culture.
Yeah.
And
consummate professional.
Yeah, he checks all those boxes that Ime Udoka has talked about constantly throughout the offseason, where it's been, you know, we need to bring in guys that know how to win and are going to set the tone for our young players and set the culture for our young players moving forward. Outside of Brooke Lopez,
speaking of setting the culture for our young players, another Rockets target, a heavily rumored Rockets target, Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, if you could tell me that they could somehow target and get Austin Reeves away from the Lakers versus getting Dylan Brooks, I'd be all over that in a heartbeat. But the reality is that I think the Rockets have, for whatever reason, really, really set their sights on Dylan Brooks. And I'm sort of at the point with Udoka where I am with D'Amico Ryans, where it's like, all right, if D'Amico wants the guy for the Texans,
I trust him.
Cool, trust his vision. Bring him in. And I feel like that's where you have to be with Ime with this Rockets team moving forward. If he believes that Dylan Brooks can be a good piece for this team, I'm willing to do that. And I think that you can get him at a relatively cut-rate deal, at least for his skill set.
You're definitely buying low on the Dylan Brooks stock.
Because Dylan Brooks,
last
we saw him was just getting memed off the court. We have never seen an NBA franchise disown a player that the way that the Memphis Grizzlies have disowned Dylan Brooks.
The Rockets got in a bidding war with the Raptors for Fred VanVleet services. That won't be happening with the Grizzlies and Dylan Brooks.
The Grizzlies have literally said, yeah, we are not bringing you back under any circumstances.
Under no circumstances.
Like,
his key card does not work.
Dylan Brooks signing you could be the key to world peace, and you know what? We are not bringing you back to Memphis. That is not going to happen.
We're going to risk it. Yeah, I definitely think that Dylan Brooks is someone that I am not looking forward to watching Dylan Brooks play basketball for the Houston Rockets. But again, like you said, the D'Amico Ryans, you know, kind of sprinkle fairy dust that Ime Udoka has on this roster, there is a little bit of like, you know what? I will trust him.
Exactly.
Because Ime Udoka has nothing but success in his past. His teams have made the playoffs, I believe, every year he's coached in the league as an assistant. And then, obviously, his 1 year as the head coach in Boston, that team went farther than they've ever gone. And not only had they gone farther than they ever gone, specifically their weaknesses that they had before that season and now the year after that season, when it comes to kind of maturity and facing pressure in the bright moments, in the bright lights, deep in the playoffs, they came up short. Except for the 1 year that they had Ime Udoka.
Yeah.
And so that's why Ime Udoka has carte blanche.
Exactly. And from a on-court perspective for a second here, I understand that Dylan Brooks is not...
Most of the conversation is off the court.
Yeah, most of the conversation around him is off-court because, look, he put that lens and that focus on himself with what happened in that series against
the Lakers. Hopefully he learns from that.
But he's an excellent defender. Like, you can say what you want about, you know, his comments to LeBron and how LeBron torched him the rest of the series. But statistically and eye test wise, Dylan Brooks is a really good defender. Now, sometimes the three is missing from the 3-and-D that he supposedly brings to the court. But, like, he's a streaky shooter, but he's not a bad shooter. He was a bad shooter these past playoffs, but he historically has not been a bad shooter. He's just someone who gets really hot. And then when he's not hot, he's cold as all hell. But this Rockets team desperately needs more defense, Sean. That is one of the things that you cannot get enough of this offseason, because they have been historically bad defensively over these past few years. And I will not ever complain about a team that is going to fight tooth and nail. Like, I know Dylan Brooks will when he's on the court for every single minute.
Yeah, and not only have they been bad on defense, it's not like a talent thing. It's not like they have a whole bunch of guys that like they have physical limitations that limit them on the defensive end. No, they're all super talented, super agile, they long arms, super athletic.
They just don't put in the effort, and they're dumb as hell.
They just don't know how to play defense, and they do not show a desire to play defense. They don't get held to a standard that you have to play defense to play on the Rockets.
And that's changing.
And that is changing. And Dylan Brooks can help change that, being a very defensive minded player, being a veteran. Same thing with Brooke Lopez. Same with Victor Oladipo. Fred VanVleet. A lot of V's, I guess. So they're all very defensive minded players. They're all leaders. They've all had. I mean, Brooke Lopez and Fred VanVleet have won championships. Dylan Brooks has not done that. But they all bring that kind of mindset, and they're going to hold the young guys accountable. And that's why, for both of us, being kind of lower on the Dylan Brooks signing, for you being lower on the Brooke Lopez signing, that's why we can still, with our reservations, kind of talk ourselves into and see, because the Rockets are at least targeting what we are valuing in free agency.
Yeah, and what's one of the biggest pieces the Rockets have been missing over the last few years? It's a veteran presence in the locker room that can hold the players accountable when the coach can't. That is so, so crucial for the young team to have a veteran voice in the locker room that can relay and relate messages to the players in a way that perhaps the coaches can't. And that's something that Steven Silas, I didn't think all that highly of him as a head coach, but he never had a veteran who is going to really help hold the young guys accountable. And they ran roughshod. They ran riot.
He had Eric Gordon, who wanted to get traded.
Yeah.
That was his veteran. Eric Gordon, who wanted to get traded, and Jayshon Tate, who's only played 3 years in the league, but he's a little bit older because he played in Europe. Yeah. That was the veteran presence.
So the spine and the backbone of the team is finally changing for the better, and I think it's going to greatly benefit whatever message Ime Udoka is going to get across to these young guys in the next season.
So we're going to keep talking about free agency and the Rockets free agency. In honor of Fred VanVleet, we're going to take a look back at some of the all-time great, or maybe just all-time biggest.
Yeah,
because biggest,
great is definitely not the adjective I would use there.
Biggest can be used for lots of money, lots of attention in the moment that it's gotten. So yes, the biggest free agency signings in Houston sports history. That's next on the Bullpen. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Still haven't kicked us out, Spencer.
Security really dislikes us, man.
No.
They're not. Spencer and security are not happy with
us. Oh, no. I feel like Spencer dislikes us. Security is like, yeah, sure thing. Sure thing, Spence. And then they, you know.
Security's enjoying the show, actually.
Yeah.
Security's enjoying the show. That's why they haven't yanked us off yet.
Yeah, or, I mean, they're just scared of us, you know.
I mean, look, we are two very intimidating individuals.
This might be, and this is just you and Charles carrying the weight of this. This might be the most physically fit radio show this year in the city of Houston. I cannot imagine if one of you guys worked
definitely
with
on
Paul,
this station.
Yeah, definitely on
this station by a mile.
I think we probably have the number one and two pick. No, Paul's going to get upset. We have two, we have the two of the top three picks of the, like, if we're to just have any sort of athletic competition, I feel like Charles, Andrew, and Paul would be the three picks. Right, that would be the top three on the big board. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, Joel's probably also going to be upset that he's not being included. But I actually, now that I think about it, Josh might be a little upset he's not included. I might have inadvertently offended like half the station.
You know what? It's okay, Sean, because we're going to have an ESPN 97.5 combine one day, and we're going to sort these issues out once and for all.
Or even just, if the three of us did a... if it was an ESPN 97.5 pickup basketball game, and the three of us was a team, it would be us versus the field.
Right? I've been waiting for a 97.5 pickup basketball tournament for a very, very long time, Sean.
I don't think you can make a team that's like better than the three of us.
I heard we were going to do a combine to settle like who picks first in our draft.
Oh, I would love that.
In our fantasy draft.
I would love that.
I'd sign me up.
I would love that.
I'm perfectly fine having the fourth pick in the draft.
Now, do we have to like make it easier for somebody? And I'm going to take shots at people, so I need to be very careful with what I'm doing here. But like Lance his, you know, ligaments are kind of made of paper mache. So, like, we can't have him out there running a 40.
It was producers only, though.
Okay.
It was producers only.
Okay. A, good. B, he has experience watching a lot of combines, and I think that's kind of at this point where he's best served. His skill set, unique skill set is good at watching athletes perform athletic measurements and go, I like that. I like his oily hips, you know?
Oily hips. Okay. That's a term I haven't heard before.
Oh, no. I keep pointing at his poster right here. Like, he's right here in the room with us. But that's something he says all the time.
Oily hips. Okay.
Oily hips. Yeah. We'll measure hand sizes, and he'll be like, yeah, you know, for NFL quarterback, 9 inches is like the kind of benchmark. But for producers, it has maybe, you know, 8.5, because you got to sometimes press 2 buttons at the same time.
At 9.25 right here, baby.
I know. We measured last year, 2 years ago now, in honor of Kenny Pickett.
Kenny Pickett, yeah.
And I forgot what my measurement was, but I was disappointed. You can tell I'm not proud of it because I don't remember. Anyway, speaking of things that Houston teams might not be proud of, let's talk about some recent memory free agent signings in the city of Houston in honor of Fred VanVleet signing for 3 years, $130 million. And let's start with the Rockets, just because A, I have the least number of players for the Rockets, and B, this is Rockets free agency.
Apples to apples.
Apples to apples. So Fred VanVleet, again, 3 years, $130 million. Maybe a little bit of an overpay. But when you combine, or when you look at other free agent targets in Rockets history, A, it's hard to find the best of all time. It's hard to find a best that you feel really good about. The best I could find, honestly, was Dwight Howard. 4 years, $88 million max in 2013, which, A, think about 10 years ago, $88 million was the max.
Yeah.
Tyrese Haliburton just got $260 million. He's a good player, but that just goes to show the inflation that we're dealing with in basketball. Dwight Howard, do you feel like he is the best free agent in Rockets history?
I mean, the list, like you mentioned, is not very long, and it's not very good. So the competition we're talking about here
is
the bar to clear here is very, very low. It's almost on the ground.
So I have four players listed for this. The person I would nominate as arguably the second best in these contracts is Patrick Beverley, who also signed in 2013, but he signed for the minimum coming out of Europe.
I mean, if we're talking taking value into the equation, then Patrick Beverley is probably the top of the list of these guys, because you also have Jeremy Lin on here, which I don't want to call it an unmitigated disaster, but
it was mitigated a little bit.
He came in and he was supposed to be the focal point of the team. Then James Harden became available for trade. You traded for James Harden.
Obviously.
And he became what he became. And obviously you weren't going to, you know, give James Harden's touches and minutes to Jeremy Lin. And they never really coexisted in the way that you wanted them to on the court. So it might be a little unfair to Jeremy Lin, but he was a bust as a Houston signing. Scottie Pippen, I didn't get to see him.
This is me going deep into the research.
The Wayback Machine.
To 1999. Scottie Pippen, 1999, signed for 5 years, $67 million to join the Houston Rockets. He did not play for the Houston Rockets for 5 years. He only played for 1 year. He feuded with Charles Barkley. He said, he mentioned how with both Barkley and Olajuwon that the offense was built around throwing the ball to the post and then just standing there. And he was like, I didn't like that whatsoever. He said it reminded me of the early days with Michael Jordan, just watching him score a bunch.
Well, sorry, Scotty. That's kind of how...
That's how it works.
That's how it works. The best player on the team gets the ball the most. So, yeah, I think from a big money perspective, Dwight Howard is probably the most comparable one. And it's not going to take a lot for Fred VanVleet to top that.
To vault up the rankings. No.
Dwight was good for a season and a half here, maybe. Like his first year here, when they played Portland in the playoffs, like Dwight was legitimately good both that year and in that playoff series against Portland. He was the Rockets' best player in that series. Outside of that, it was a mixed bag at best. The next year, he had the back issues, and he was in and out of the lineup. He was there for the postseason run, and you actually got the best version of Dwight because he accepted a role of just being a rim-running big who's not going to demand post touches.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because of the fact that he hadn't played with the team for the majority of the year, so he was willing to not, you know, sacrifice the flow of the team to be the best version of himself. Unfortunately, that only lasts so long with these star NBA players, right? They want to, you know, assume a bigger role, and then that led to what we ended up seeing with Dwight.
Yeah, and speaking of free agent centers rumored to be joining the Houston Rockets, free agent center Brook Lopez, who we were just talking about last segment, is returning to the Milwaukee Bucks on a two-year $48 million contract. A, get your money, Brook Lopez. But, yeah, so the Rockets not going to be able to sign Brook Lopez. The center market outside of him is very much, I mean, you'll get what you want because this is going to be Sengun's show. Barring a trade that they make for one of a center, it will be kind of Sengun's show. We'll actually break it here. We'll talk a little bit more about some free agent history in the city of Houston and look ahead to today's and the rest of the series when it comes to the Astros versus the Rangers. Stick around. It's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 925.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Last segment, and guess what? The world is falling apart in the city of Houston, or the city of Houston is falling apart. Well, the world, if you read some current events, the world's also falling apart. Anyway, Brook Lopez has decided to remain a Milwaukee Buck for 2 years, $48 million. We just talked about the Rockets' pursuit of Brook Lopez and some of your questions about the fit and some of my questions about the fit as well. But ultimately, we landed on he's still a good player. The Rockets are in the business, should be in the business, of just getting good players. Now that he's off the board, what's your reaction to this deal and what's next for the Rockets?
My reaction to this deal is I understand why the Rockets didn't sign it because that's basically using up all of your remaining available cap space and you're not going to be able to make any other moves outside of, you know, a potential sign and trade for somebody. But man, this one stings because it feels like the Rockets put all of their eggs into the Fred VanVleet and Brook Lopez baskets.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you need to make sure that you come home with both of those guys that you've invested a lot of your effort, time, and money to try and sign. And all of a sudden now, you look at where they can potentially pivot. And on the current free agent market, you would be trying to get someone who's a rim protector. And it just does not look like there are a lot of legitimate options the market at all.
I can read you some remaining free agent centers. You got Mason Plumlee.
I would take him. Like, as a backup rotational center, looking at the names on this list.
Dwight Powell, Biznack Biyombo as kind of rotation centers that are, they're
okay.
Where it moves from Alperen Sengun maybe coming off the bench for Brook Lopez, Alperen Sengun would start over all these guys. Really, what you're looking for is what these guys bring from a defensive element. You just need that. You need a player with his skill set on the team. So you are looking at the Alex Lins, the Mo Bambas of the world, hook 'em. Omer Yurtseven, Jock Landale. I actually would like Jock Landale, but that might be a little too NBA in the weeds for this segment of, you know, kind of like Jock Landale. Yeah, they need a center. They won't. So for the Rockets, they won't be basically using the, let's just say they matched this offer of $24 million a year for 2 years. And Brook Lopez, obviously, as anyone would, if the offers are the same, stay with the Milwaukee Bucks as opposed to the Rockets. So I don't think the Rockets are going to now turn this $24 million and point it at a different center. They're shopping in a different aisle, so to speak, in the center market. But they still do need some of the defensive stuff that Brook Lopez brings, and they need a cheaper version.
Yeah, and the problem is you're not going to be able to find a real version of that anywhere left on the market, and obviously that's why Brook Lopez was so coveted by the Rockets. I'm a little surprised at the lengths Milwaukee went to get him back after they re-signed Chris Middleton. I was anticipating that they probably weren't going to have the money or would have to move some things around. Yeah, and the fact that they're able to get both of them, I'm assuming that they've probably got some moves coming down the pipe to try and, you know, ease whatever cap space they have and maneuver it to make it work. But yeah, you're 100% right. The Rockets had, what, 25-odd million to spend? And so the minute that Milwaukee was able to pay $24 million or so to Brook Lopez for 2 years, there was zero shot that he was going to be coming to Houston.
And so let's say that, again, they're not going to spend $25 million on either one of these, any of these remaining centers. So what if they go more in the power forward route? Would that be something you're interested in? And now, at this point, free agency, there's just so much more. The Rockets still have so much money left, and there's not the players quite there to spend it on.
If you could get Grant Williams, I would be fun. I think that would be a fun signing. I think that would be good.
The reason the Rockets weren't going after the Austin Reeves, the Grant Williams, the restricted free agents in this class is because you don't want your money tied up for, I believe, the team that holds the restricted rights has the right to match or not match. The decision is I think the 8th, it's the 7th or 8th of July. Yeah. So you don't want to tie up your money that long on the first day of free agency. Makes sense why the Rockets didn't do that. Now that we're in a position where this cap space isn't as valuable in the here and now, the cap space is going to be there for a while, do you then go maybe swallow some of your morals and go with Miles Bridges? Or do you go with Grant Williams, someone who Ime Udoka has some familiarity with? Both of them bring a little bit of shooting to his team, and Grant Williams is a better defender.
Yeah, I think that Grant Williams would be an excellent addition to this Rockets roster. Obviously, he's not going to bring the same skill set that Brook Lopez.
No, you're not swapping like
for yeah, like. Here. And I think the reality is with the names that are left, Mason Plumlee is the only one that stands out to me as someone who, in a bench role, could offer you some semblance of the things that Brook Lopez does from a defensive perspective. But what made Brook Lopez so valuable is what he can do on the other end of the court. And obviously, there's nobody who's going to do that. So Grant Williams is the name that stands out to me,
because he can provide some of that shooting and the defense, obviously to a lesser degree on both sides of the ball, to be honest. But he is, at least he's playing a different position, and he can play next. He's a little bit more of a cleaner fit next to Sengun. So I talked about how the world is falling apart, and that is not just limited to the Rockets. We also got some bad Astros news. Again, with, 15 minutes left in the show, we got double barrel bad news. This is from Brian McTaggart. The Astros will skip Framber Valdez's turn in the rotation after he sprained his ankle against the Mets. It affected him in St. Louis. They hope he can make one more start before the All-Star break. He was penciled in to start the Sunday's matchup against the Rangers. What are your thoughts on Framber missing some time?
I'm really curious how the Astros are going to handle this now, because there were some whispers from Dusty and other people around the Astros that Christian Javier might not make his start on Monday. So all of a sudden, are we talking about potentially Framber missing a start Sunday, Javier missing a start Monday?
Yeah.
That is far from an ideal situation.
Brian Belak.
Well, and
Brandon Belak.
Obviously, it puts way more pressure on today's game with Hunter Brown, right? All of a sudden, if you're looking at potentially not having Framber and not having Javier, are you going, well, crap, we feel like we need to win this start with Hunter Brown now? Because if we are trotting out to Sugarland Space Cowboys to start
nothing's
the
promised
games after that, then, you know, what are we doing here? Like, all of a sudden, it puts the onus on Hunter Brown to go out there and shove so you can, at minimum, split the series.
And not just shove, like, go long, too.
Yeah.
He's going to have to go long, because you're expecting you're going to have to use more of your bullpen the next two games.
Yeah, might see a little more Rafael Montero, which everybody loves to see more of.
Oh, my God. By the way, it wouldn't be a Astros injury update if it didn't include that he sprained his ankle like over a week ago and made another start before they're like, actually, this injury is serious. Like, the Astros injury, the trainers, the injury staff has me so spooked at any moment that I'm like, Framber Valdez might not have an ankle anymore. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. If Framber Valdez is out for one start, maybe. If this tweet is right, he's out for this start, but he'll make one more start
before the All-Star break.
I could believe that. I could also believe that he'll be out for a month, because that's just how Astros injuries go. Almost a year ago today, Michael Brantley was assigned to the 10-day DL for shoulder discomfort. He has not played baseball since.
I mean, he's had a couple rehab starts.
He has not played professional.
He has not played major league baseball since.
Also, the stops and start with his rehab. I feel like strengthens my argument at the... I don't think the Astros know what they're doing when it comes to injuries.
No, I don't think that there's much of an argument against what you have to say there.
I'm panicking.
But I will say, as far as Astros injury updates go, I think this is actually relatively positive. Like, we have a actual
diagnosis
of what the injury is.
A body part and a diagnosis.
It's not lower right leg discomfort. I believe it's his right leg.
In a time that it happened. Like, this is, I mean, this might be a HIPAA violator. Dusty Baker's like, wait, whoa.
Dusty Baker is up in arms because McTaggart has reported the actual like events that led to the injury, what the injury is, a potential timeline for return. Like we have a bunch of we have a bunch of ingredients in here that we basically never get from the Astros. No, so
we're lucky to get one.
Well, obviously, it's incredibly disappointing that Fromber is going to miss a start in what is very likely the biggest series the Astros are going to play
it
in the regular
this
season this year.
Into Sears Shepard.
Yeah, like well, it throws a wrench into. We were talking earlier this show about the Astros need to get greedy. We need to think about winning 3 out of 4 or potentially sweeping after winning the Ronel Blanco start. Well, now all of a sudden, if the Fromber starts in jeopardy, and we already thought the Javier start might be in jeopardy, it's like. Hey,
you take the split.
You take the split, and you get the hell out of there. You know, you bank that. You bank those two games, and you
go home.
Speed your way to the All-Star break in any way, shape, or form. So, obviously, disappointing from that perspective. But as far as Astros injury updates go, this one is not the ambiguous. You know, oh, he might be dead. So, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't have to go. Who do you think comes back first? Framber Valdez, Lance McCullers, or Jose Urquidy?
Oh, God, that sounded like... That's a game that I don't even want to think about
playing. Luckily, again, and, you know, maybe we're just setting ourselves up to get our hearts broken again, but this one does sound a little bit more positive to where you say Framber without any hesitation. But just the state of this rotation, it's been such a snake bit year for the Astros. We talked about this series and how... Our expectations just changed, and this is our plan coming into the show of what are your prediction for the rest of this Rangers series?
You know what? I'm going to take the split, and I'm going to go home happy, Sean. They're going to win this Hunter Brown game, and I have no idea what the hell is happening
To quote Clubber Lang from Rocky III, my prediction, pain. This is... I'm ready. I am prepared for a disaster. Anyway, I'm going to go drink my sorrows away. That's been The Bullpen on a Saturday. ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Thanks for listening, folks.